they came up with the name of the workshop and then asked if I'd lead it. And I'd be glad to, but I don't like the name of the workshop or the seminar. It's called Radical Reliance on the Scriptures. So that's how I'd rename the time, is Radical Reliance on God. Because I'm not really relying on this. It's all about a relationship. And like I shared in the little reflection time last night, you know, God is a relational God. And every time God reveals himself through this, it's an invitation into a relationship. And so the question, you know, when we come to this, you know, in our time in the Word every day, the question is not what can I learn or what am I learning? I think the question is, how is what I read today inviting me into a relationship with God and in the relationship with the Trinity and in a relationship into the purposes of God? So this is always a relational invitation. And I think the danger is that this, for the Christian, I think the danger is that truth becomes an it. Truth is not an it for us, it's a who. Because Jesus said, I'm the way, the truth. So truth is always a who for us, it's not an it. So anyways, radical reliance on God. Now, you notice on your handout, another title I might give this time that I jotted down here was the pathway to true reliance, or the pathway to radical reliance. And you'll notice on your handout there that there are three forks in the road. Let's see, get this overhead is so we can do this. There are three forks in the road, and at every fork in the road, there's a key question that will either lead us on the pathway to true reliance, or we'll go off in the direction of the red arrows here into some dead-end streets. And so that's going to be the content of the time, is we're going to look at what are the three questions. Why do we seek to rely on the Scriptures? And we can go one way or the other. And then what's the focus of our reliance? And one way will lead us to a dead end. And then the third one is what response should reliance elicit in our life? So that's kind of the pathway for the rest of the morning here. Let's look at that first question. Why do we seek to rely on the Scriptures? What might be some of the dead end answers to that are pretty... they're pretty common, but they're dead ends. They aren't very healthy for us spiritually. What do you think might be some of those?
Performance.
Okay, performance. So what's that look like to go to the, Doug, what does that look like to rely on the Scriptures to perform? Uh-huh. Good. How'd that leave you in a dead end?
Barbara mentioned that just by doing that didn't necessarily mean that I made it to an encounter with Christ.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, good.
And it may have given me, actually it did give me a false sense of security.
Yeah, good. Great. That's what we're after. Why else do people...
looking for rules.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. They go to rules. Let's talk about that for a minute. What's wrong with that?
Then we think if we follow the rules, we can measure up.
Yeah. And what's the matter with that? Mm-hmm. Okay. What is living by rules often called?
Legalism.
And boy, we could talk about that for a long time. But you know, legalism is believing that I can please God by my behavior. I can please God, and that by avoiding certain behavior, I can please God. That's what legalism is. In other words, it's believing that my relationship with God is based on my behavior. My intimacy with God is based on my behavior. That's legalism. See, and if we believe that my intimacy with God is based on my behavior, then what we're really saying is the cross didn't work. Because the basis of my relationship with my Father is the cross. And one way I like to say it is this. Just as I depend on the work of Christ on the cross for a relationship with my Father, so God depends on the work of Christ on the cross to have a relationship with me. He doesn't depend on my behavior, good or bad, to determine his relationship with me. Okay. So good. Rules. Why else do people go to the scriptures? Pam?
Well, because we think we should do that, and that that's a good thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
So then we approach it based on duty more than passion.
Ooh. Duty. Ooh, good. What else?
To seek the truth.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Now, we're working on the dead end side, and you put the truth here.
Oh, no.
Which I would. Let's just hold on this for a minute, okay? That is a fascinating comment. We'll come back to that one. Other reasons people go to the scriptures. I thought I heard another one.
I said,
knowledge. Okay. That was one of my three lines here. You notice I wasn't filling in the right answers here.
We're remedial class.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, knowledge, or for some people, I used the phrase last night in a little reflection, it was information. And it's not wrong, I mean, it's not wrong, but it sure doesn't get us where we want to go. But some people are absolutely fixated on the knowledge and the information of the scriptures, you know, the cultures and the languages and the customs and the history. And they just, they know that stuff. But there's something missing. Okay? I used this one last night. Some people go to the scriptures for inspiration. Okay? And that's finding a thought, you know, they can carry with you for the day. Type thing. Okay. And then we already have this up there in rules. Another word for that is we go to the scriptures for moral guidance, which is another way of saying the rule thing. What do all these have? What are some of the things all those have in common? Oh, yeah. Bullseye. They're all about us. Okay. What else do you see they have in common?
They all could be good things.
Yep. Like in the eyes of the world, they're all good things. Mm-hmm. Yeah. One thought I had is most of them don't require anything from us. There's no demand on us for these. Knowledge doesn't, you know, if the scriptures just become information, information doesn't require anything from us. You know, information informs us, but never calls for our involvement at all. If the scriptures are just information, then the scriptures become an it.
Another thing is we judge their value.
Oh. Expound on that.
It might be inspirational for you, it's not for me. Or moral guidance.
Yeah, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I guess I really need to know that.
No. Yeah.
Use it as a guide.
Use it as a guide. Mm-hmm. Saying, you know, I think so many people use God and Jesus as a guide to live their life. And I think Jesus didn't come to tell you how to live your life. He came to give you life. but not tell you how to live it. With all these external rules. You know, he came to transform us on the inside out of which we can live. And yeah. So we reduce the scriptures to a guidebook. That's not a lot of fun. Let's see. All of these are totally non-relational. There's no relationship in any of those. Okay. And so when we go to the scriptures for these reasons, it's a depersonalized way of relating to the scriptures. Okay. It's like relating to my calculus book or whatever. It's just not personal. Okay. So if we were to put two things over here, Why do we rely on the scriptures? See if you can come up with the two I had. Okay. I'll help you. Okay, for the remedial class here. Huh?
Relationship.
Okay, we come to the scriptures for relationship. Barb, I would take yours. However you spell it. I was a chemistry major because I couldn't read and I couldn't write. Yeah, that's right. So. See, I think we come to the scriptures, to God for the scriptures for two things. We always come, it's always relational. And that's why we're always asking the question, how does this invite me into relationship? See, when God, this is God revealing himself. God is relational. And so every time he reveals himself, it's relational and it's personal. This is never an it. And that's why I'm not relying on this. I'm relying on God who says this. Okay? I'm not trusting in this. I'm trusting in God. Okay. So we always come for relationship and transformation. I jotted down some things here. I don't think this is God telling us something. Like I said, that little quote I put on the screen last night, God doesn't give speeches. This isn't God telling us something. I think this is God having a conversation with us in which he wants to draw us into participation with him. This is a living and abiding word of a living person. And a lot of times we just turn it into a one-sided speech. Okay. So I don't think God is just informing us or telling us things, but they're given to us to involve us relationally. So and then we look to it for transformation. I think of Galatians 4:19 when I think of that. You know, Paul says, I'm again in travail until Christ be formed in you. That's what it's all about. I'm going down to Texas next weekend to speak to the collegiate conference down there for the weekend. And we're going to spend a lot of time talking about how Jesus is not in the business of changing your behavior. And, you know, half people think I'm a heretic as soon as I say that. Jesus is not in the business of changing your behavior. He's in the business of changing who you are on the inside, out of which your behavior comes. Tom?
So as an old-time navigator, application...
Are you, who are you saying is an old-time navigator?
Me.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to move that application thing into transformation.
Yes.
And my being an old-time navigator, application kind of connotes behavior.
Yes.
So we're not talking about application changing behavior, although if we are in the scriptures, our behavior changes as a result of our
knowing God. Yeah, and, you know, like in Matthew 23, Jesus is haranguing on the Pharisees for being hypocrites. Okay. And most people will say being a hypocrite is saying one thing and doing another. That's not Jesus' definition of a hypocrite. He takes it a lot deeper than that. Jesus says it's not saying one thing and doing another. He says it's doing one thing and on the inside being something else. Okay. He says, now that's hypocrisy. And so he's very concerned about how I said at the staff conference is Jesus never measures my maturity based on my behavior. Jesus never measures my spiritual maturity based on my behavior. Because how is the Pharisees' behavior? How is it described? Perfect. It was beautiful. You appear as righteous. I mean, they worked on their behavior. And Jesus absolutely reams them out as hypocrites. Because as hard as they worked on their behavior, it never transformed who they were on the inside. Okay. So you go to Galatians 5, the fruit of the Spirit. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, self-control. Against such things there is no law. See, those are not behaviors. That is a description of a miraculously transformed heart. And how do you know it's not behaviors in Galatians 5:22 when it talks about the fruit of the Spirit? What's the clue that that's not a description of our behaviors? Any idea? Yeah, Jeannie?
Against these there is no law.
Yes. Why is that a clue?
Because you wouldn't have to pass a law to keep someone from doing those things.
See, you can make a law. You can make a law that keeps me from stealing from you. But you can't make a law that goes inside and deals with the covetousness that makes me want to steal. You can make a law that keeps me from killing you, but you can't make a law that goes inside that deals with the hatred that makes me want to kill you. You can make a law, supposedly, that keeps me from speeding, but you can't make a law that goes inside and deals with the impatience that makes me want to do that. See? And so when Paul says in Galatians 5 there, the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, and so forth. And then he says, against such things there's no law. See, if they were behaviors, you could make a law that dealt with them. But he says, you can't make a law that deals with these things because these are inner qualities where law can't go. And so Galatians 5 is a description of this transformation that God wants to do. And what's interesting, Tom, is the Pharisees, see, skipped right to the behavior. But in Galatians 5, four times, Paul talks about the process. He says, walk with the Spirit, keep in step with the Spirit. I forget the other ways he says it, but four times he talks about walk with the Spirit. And the focus is on, okay, what's the process of transformation? Don't jump right to the outcome. Now, I'm feeling impatient. Say, I'm feeling impatient with you, Tom. Does it mean I don't behave patiently? No. I still behave patiently. Because I think of James, he who says, who knows what is right to do and fails to do it, for him it's sin. So I behave patiently, even though on the inside I'm very impatient. And what that tells, that's a big yellow light going off on my dashboard that I have a big problem. I'm what Jesus calls a hypocrite. Now, I'm still going to treat you lovingly or patiently or whatever, but I've got a severe problem. Like I'll tell the kids next weekend down in Texas, we'll talk about pornography. And we'll talk about how pornography is not really the issue. Okay. My behavior is not the issue. See, it's who I am on the inside that's the issue that makes me behave that way. And so if they pray, God forgive me for looking at pornography, God forgive me for looking at pornography, God forgive me for looking at pornography, I'm going to tell them that's the wrong prayer. The prayer you should be praying is this: God forgive me because I'm the kind of person on the inside that wants to do it. That's the issue. See? And so we got a little off track here, but we come to the scriptures for this inner transformation of who we are, not so the scriptures box in our behavior with a whole bunch of rules and guidelines and moral instructions. Does that make sense? Tom? Let's build off what Tom just said. What would be the difference in how I approach the scriptures versus approaching it for these reasons and now approaching it for these reasons? What would be the difference in what I do here and how it looks?
I think one of the differences would be the hunger for it.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So, yeah, okay. Let's keep going. Let's keep building on that. Brian?
I think if you are pursuing the scriptures for relationship, transformation recaptures the value of those things that otherwise are dead ends in and of themselves. So knowledge in and of itself heads us towards a dead end. Inspiration heads us towards a dead end. moral guidance heads us toward a dead end. But if we pursue the scriptures for relationship, that transformation takes those dead ends and recaptures the value that there is in moral guidance,
mm-hmm.
value that there is in inspiration. And knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's a good thought.
Well, a footnote of that, too, is if we're pursuing the relationship and transformation results, I mean, we're doing it for a lifetime.
Yes.
The other things are short-sighted, usually, and without the relationship, it can die on the vine.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, one, again, is that need and that hunger internally that was mentioned versus doing it because it's a good thing, it's the right thing you should be doing in order to grow. But then the growth gets short-circuited
mm-hmm.
because, you know, the relationship is
it's not there.
Yeah.
Yep. Jeannie?
I'm just wondering, like, as far as the memory verses are concerned, how do you bring that in? I mean, I know it's transforming.
Okay. Let's go through this little chart first, and then we'll answer that question, okay?
Okay.
What's the difference between an informational approach to the scriptures and a transformational approach? All right. This is interesting. An informational approach to the scriptures, what you tend to do is you tend to seek to cover as much ground as possible, as often as possible. I mean, Your Honor. So quantity is important in an informational approach. Now, this is not bad. There's just a difference here, okay? Transformational is you focus on small portions and you move slowly, very hesitantly. I remember, and well, you've heard me tell the story, but the year after I had the burnout for a year, and could finally get back into the scriptures. I spent just about a full year in 1 John. Because I knew there are truths in the book of 1 John about my identity that had to go deep in me. And I didn't have the freedom to move on. God just didn't give me the freedom to move on. And so when you're reading transformationally, it may be incredibly slow, you know, and you may get on a passage day after day after day after day, and you just get this sense there's more there. There's more there for me. There's something here for me I don't have yet. And you don't sense the freedom of the Spirit to go on. Whereas informational reading, and you may do that at the same time, that's this. It's my daily reading record. You know, and as an old-time navigator, Tom, click off three boxes a day, three chapters a day, and then you get through the Bible in a year. You know, I still do it. but what I've had to learn is slow down. Focus on the transformation. Oh, does that make some sense? Informational reading, the focus is on the breadth of content. Transformational reading, you're on the depth of life. Different outcomes you're after. Informational reading, you're seeking to master the text. In transformational approach to the scriptures, you're allowing the text to master you. Informational reading, you're usually in control. You have a plan. You know, the plan is if I read three chapters a day, I'll be through the Bible in a year. A transformational reading is I move as the Spirit allows me to go. Informational reading, it's highly analytical, it's critical, it's judgmental. Those aren't necessarily bad words, but it's a very analytical approach. You know, it's a study, dissect it, analyze it type approach. Okay. Information, you're problem solving over the other side. Boy, sometimes there's just a lot of mystery. So down at the bottom, I just put one informs the mind, The other speaks to the heart. And that's probably some mix of this. Doug? Yeah.
We're kind of in control.
Yeah.
A word that I like for that second one is there's more of a desperation. At least that's an idea.
Mm-hmm.
Is that on the left side, like you said, I'm in control, and it seems like, you know, this is something I got control over and everything. You know, I can track this through and stuff. But on the right hand side, you know, as you were talking about the difference between the hypocrisy that we tend to think. Difference between what I say and what I do. And then you said the hypocrisy is really the difference between my actions and what my heart says.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That's, you know, when you think of it that way, it's like, well, who can be saved? So in my relationship with Pam, I'm going, okay, I'm feeling really impatient right now. I want to act out of my impatience. And then I do pretty good. And I act out of my impatience, out of my patience, but I'm still impatient.
Yeah.
Well, if I know that's going on, my approach to the scriptures is desperate.
Yes.
That I through the scriptures to Christ, that I'm desperate because I need to be transformed.
Yeah. But I think, you know, for years and years and years and years, I didn't realize there, you know, I was pretty much on the left-hand side making daily applications, though, you know, and never really thought about what is the relational, transformational way to approach the scriptures as opposed to just a study way. Okay. Well, listen, we need to move on here. We're taking way too long. Okay, what is the focus of it? We know why we rely. We rely for relation and transformation. What's the focus of our reliance? What are the right answers? Okay, God. You know one I'd put over here that's a dead end? And again, this is going to sound a little heretical. And there's some overlap, I got to admit. That's why I saved the truth thing. I think there's a subtle but very important difference here of what's the focus of my reliance. Is it a relational reliance on somebody I trust and somebody I know will speak truth to me? Or is my reliance just on a set of truth over here? That could be very impersonal. Could be a list of stuff. You catch the difference? And I think so many times in Bible studies, people go to the scriptures just for truth and not relationship.
Right. Truth seems to lead to the whole right versus wrong issue.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. And so this is full of truth. But I think a lot of times what people do is they try to separate the truth. They try to take the truth out of a relationship. And they depersonalize it. This could really be misunderstood. I mean, I was very nervous about this. But I think you catch the drift. Okay. So, right or wrong, what might be other ways that if people are constantly heading this way in terms of their approach to the scriptures, how does it manifest itself? What are other ways Maybe we got them. Ooh, yeah. Judgmental?
Know-it-all?
Mm-hmm.
Something that maybe Skip mentioned this morning in terms of sensitivity. I have the truth. Therefore, you need to listen up.
Yeah.
I think that's where the Pharisees got hung up. They had the truth, but they didn't have the love.
Yes.
So, it doesn't do any good.
Yeah. Love. That's really good, Barb. Okay. Well, what response? Third fork in the road. So why do we rely? We rely on it for transformation, for relationship. The focus is God. Now, what type of response does this reliance elicit? And I'm going to have to give you the answers here, okay? Well, I'll give you one. One response, and the proper one, is obedience, and we're going to unpack this. What would be something that is similar to obedience, but would be leading to a dead end? What? Conformance?
Compliance.
Compliance. That's the word we're after. What's the difference between obedience and compliance?
Obedience, you want to, and compliance, you may not want to, but you're going to do it anyway.
Okay, let's keep going on that one. Obedience, you want to. Why?
So work your way out the relationship.
Okay, because?
Out of gratitude.
Yeah, okay. So compliance, you don't want to, because why?
Self.
What was that?
Self.
Self?
Yeah, your way.
Mm-hmm.
It's a rule.
God's
bigger than I am, so I guess I better do what he says.
Yeah. Okay.
Compliance seems externally motivated, and obedience is internally motivated.
Yeah. Okay. If you had to give a definition, okay, we're on definition, but if we had to put a definition on compliance, what might a one-sentence definition be of compliance that takes a lot of this into?
Following the rules.
Following the rules, yep.
Please God that way.
Yeah, pleasing God for rules, yeah.
Somewhere in there, you're worried and busy about what other people are going to think about you if you don't do, you know, this thing. Even though your heart posture inside's like, I do not want to do this. But then you comply because it's like, what would they think if
yes.
I don't do this?
Yes. Okay.
Based on behavior.
Yeah.
I shut my heart off.
I shut my heart off. Hey, let me give you two definitions. And all this is packed into it. Compliance is behavior that is rooted in the fear of another person's power. Okay? Compliance is behavior that is rooted in the fear of another person's power. So the root of compliance is fear and power. Okay. Obedience is behavior that's rooted in trust of another person's character. Obedience is behavior that's rooted in the trust of another person's character. So the root of compliance is fear. The root of obedience is trust. Okay? See, I comply because you've got power, and I'm scared that if I don't, here's going to the consequences are going to be. And so I do what you say. And when I comply, all I do is I live up to your expectations. That's all the farther I will get in my character development. Okay? Whereas obedience, I am... Well, let me draw a picture here. This might help. This is a long way around to get to what I want to say. This is a combination of Bill Tell and Bill Thrall stuff. All from, you guys know Bill? Yeah. Had breakfast with Bill last week when I was down in Phoenix. So this is a combination of some of his stuff. And, you know, Bill talks about we need to live a life of integrity. I'm going to get to obedience way down here. Okay? We live a life of integrity. This is me. And let's say this is you over here. I was going through this with the college kids at church last week. It was so much fun. My integrity. What's integrity? How do you define integrity? Yeah. It's just, I'm not a fake. I don't tell you one thing, and then when I'm not looking, you see something else. I tell you what I'm good at. I tell you what I'm bad at. I tell you where I'm struggling. I mean, you know the truth about me, okay? That allows you to trust me. My integrity allows you to trust me. I mean, if you know somebody doesn't have integrity, will you trust them? Absolutely not. Okay. And here's another interesting aspect of it. If you don't trust somebody, if you don't trust me, it doesn't matter, and this is Bill Thrall stuff, if you don't trust me, it doesn't matter how much I love you, you can't receive it. Okay? Because you're like this. And you're wearing a mask. And you're hiding because you don't. And so, if I live a life of integrity, it allows you to trust me. If you trust me, you can receive my love. And so for the first time, you can be loved. See? And here's a great explanation of what's going on in our youth culture so much, in our whole culture. You know, trust is a rare, rare commodity. And young people don't trust. Yes, it is. See, because this is a rare commodity, young people can't trust. Because they can't trust, they can't receive the love of the people around them. When you don't receive love and you aren't loved, you find a substitute. And you know what the substitute for being loved is? You know what you seek out?
Sex.
Yeah, pleasure. See, pleasure is a cheap substitute for love. And we have a pleasure-addicted culture. But it's all rooted in this. Well, if you trust me, you'll let me love you. You will practice what and Thrall, this is another Bill Thrall thing. You practice humility, which is just telling God and other people the truth about you, and that will lead you to practice vulnerability, which is very different from transparency. When I'm transparent with you, I'm in control. I may tell you some things about myself, but I'm in control. And so transparency can be very manipulative. I can manipulate you with transparency by deciding what I'm going to let you in on and what I'm going to let you not on. And so transparency and integrity don't necessarily go together. Transparency can be selective integrity. Okay. Whereas when I'm vulnerable, when you're going to be vulnerable with me, you make four choices. You're going to choose to reveal yourself to me. Okay? So you're just going to tell me the truth. You're struggling with this. Yeah, I'm having trouble here. I'm doing okay here. So in some ways, that's transparency. Then you're going to choose to give me access to your life. In other words, there's no question I can't ask you. I can overturn any stone. I can open up any closet. But you give me access. Bill, you can ask me anything. Doug and I are in the national leadership team, and once in a while we have this little exercise. We'll break into small groups of three or four of us, and we play this exercise. You can ask me anything. So that's the second decision. Third decision is you choose to let me teach you. See, and at that point, truth can come into your life. Now, the tipping point is right here, between the third decision and the fourth decision of vulnerability. If I'm going to be vulnerable, I make a fourth decision. Because I trust you, I choose to come under your influence. An awful lot of people stop right here. I'll let somebody teach me, and they'll teach me some truth from the scriptures. But when I go away, I decide I'm not going to do that. Coming under the influence might be, you know, in our relationship, say I've had a fight with Sue, which never happens. and so I'm getting together with Doug, okay? And Doug is here. And I reveal myself to Doug. I say, boy, Sue and I had a horrible fight this week. And Doug knows he has access, so he prods around and asks some questions. And then he chooses to teach me. And the truth comes to my life. And he says, Bill, have you gone and said you're sorry? Bill, have you asked forgiveness? No. Now, and he teaches me from the scriptures about asking forgiveness and being humble and so forth, okay? There's the teaching. And then he says, Bill, you need to go do that. That's where my fourth choice comes in. Am I going to come under Doug's influence? Am I going to do what he says? See? And because Doug says, Bill, I trust him, you know, because of the life he's lived, the integrity and so forth, I trust him. I go home and do what he says. When I do that, that's what's called obedience. See, obedience is choosing to come under the influence of somebody I trust. And so obedience is always a relational word. Obedience is a relational concept. I'm coming under the influence of somebody I trust because they have integrity. I know their character. Okay? And so it's the same thing with God. It's easier to illustrate, I think, on the human level a little bit. But obedience is coming under the influence of the truth of God because of his character. I can trust what he says. And so my obedience is always rooted in a relationship of trust with God. Okay? And so the key thoughts I want you to grab, obedience is always relational. It's always rooted in trust. Okay. And so when you think, see the pathway here, it's relationship, Every step of the way, reliance on the scriptures is relationship with somebody I can trust. Let's talk about this. Thoughts? Does it make sense? There's a huge difference between compliance and obedience. And so I think how much of the applications that I make out of my quiet time and my Bible study are compliance because I fear the power of God versus it's really obedience because I trust God because of his character. And I have a hunch over the years, a lot of my biblical behavior and godly behavior has been more in the compliant realm. I'm doing something because I'm fearful that if I don't, I'm going to experience, you know, something. Versus I'm doing it because I am in a relationship of trust with my Father and I can trust him. Yeah.
How many pastors understand
this? I don't have a clue. What do you think?
Because I'm involved with being a seminary and retreating pastors, I really don't want them to miss this.
And think about this. Think about this. What does it, you know, when we disciple somebody, what's our goal in discipleship? It's to get them to this relationship with their Father. Okay? What does most discipleship look like? It's a curriculum. It's content. See? This, man, to get somebody to this point, one is I can't get anybody to this point unless they see me living a life of integrity. Till I can get them to the point of trusting me, allow them to love them, get them to understand, you know, and finally trust me enough to come under my influence when I teach them. To me, this is what discipling somebody is. It's totally relational, built on character. The truth flows. They come under the influence of it. This is discipleship. Yeah. One of the messages I'm giving to the college kids next week down in Dallas is on the spiritual disciplines. Why do we do them? And I said, you never understand the disciplines unless you understand the gospel. And so we're going to spend some time on what's the gospel. We're spending a couple of messages on the gospel because, like you said, people don't understand the gospel. And what I'm going to say, the gospel... We're going to go through the four Gospels and look at every time Jesus says, go preach the gospel or the good news, it's always the good news or the gospel of the kingdom. The good news of the gospel is that we can live in the kingdom today. I can be transferred from the kingdom of darkness to the kingdom of light. There's a whole new kingdom for me to live in. That's the good news of the gospel. Now, entering this creates a real problem. The kingdom is something you enter. That creates a huge problem, and hence the whole substitutionary atonement of Christ on the cross and the life of Christ and all of that allows me to enter into the kingdom, into the presence of God. And then, so then we're going to talk about what's the kingdom like. Well, it's full of resources. It's full of truth. It's full of answered prayer. It's full of wisdom, et cetera. The kingdom is absolutely full of resources. And you think, okay. And it's like my mom, when she immigrated to the country, you know, I can go to the Ellis Island website and see the date she came through Ellis Island. And here she walks through the doors of Ellis Island in this brand new country. And can't you just picture her making a decision? I'm going to live just like I was in the old country. I'm not going to make use of any of the new resources. Think of a poor homeless immigrant, like maybe the Lost Boys of Sudan coming to America, you know. And they come in and they say, you know, I'm going to live just like I did in Sudan. I'm going to continue to live as a poor, homeless, lost boy. And they're in this new country where there's all these resources. And so we come into this new kingdom where there's all kinds of resources. How do we connect with those resources? It's the disciplines. See, the kingdom is full of truth. But what do I have to do? And the truth in the kingdom begins to infiltrate my life. The kingdom of God is full of answered prayer. But what do I have to do to experience answered prayer? I got to pray. Now, these things are all mine. I don't have to earn them. They're mine as a citizen of the kingdom. And you can keep going here. You can make a huge list of all the resources. The spiritual disciplines are what I do to experience what's already mine. And I think that's where things like scripture memory and quiet time and Bible study and prayer and all that, that's the lifestyle of the kingdom so that I can experience the riches and the wealth of the kingdom and not continue to live like a lost boy. See, I can choose, you know, I can enter the kingdom and continue to live like a poor beggar. Or I can go into the kingdom. And that's, I think that's where those things come in. It's just the lifestyle of the kingdom. Does that make sense? But this is back to the Phoenix Seminary. This is what it means to grow people. This is the pathway. It's so much easier to have a 7-book series you take people through. But you're not getting to hear. Doug? And they, is it, yeah. Because it didn't exist before last week, Doug. I mean, this works. I think the most transformational question that I think I include you in this, Sue, that we have learned to approach the scriptures with is this. What would it look like to trust this in my life today? And sit there in the morning and ponder, what would it look like, you know, you're in this, you're right here. What would it look like for me to trust that today? And then to go ahead and live that out in trust. That has been the most transformational thing I think I've ever done with the scriptures. And it's just been the last few years. And the verse that we have asked that question of more than any is 1 John 3:1. Says, how great is the love the Father has lavished upon us that we should be called the children of God. And to take that in the morning and say, what would it look like to trust that I'm a child of God, that my identity and my worth is in being the beloved child of God, of the Father. What would it look like to trust that today and live that out today? What would that look like? And then just sit in the morning and think through the day how I'm tempted to live out of a false identity where my worth is in what you think of me versus my worth being in what it says here, the child of God. And how will that change what I do today? That has been life-changing. Any other thoughts? Yeah.
Flip the chart back one page. This is just a thought, but I think in discipling others and, well, in walking with God ourselves, but in helping others walk with God too, I think a lot of times we get into trouble because we assume certain things in relationships. We assume in order to impart truth, you know, and we want the obedience, trust thing, but we're on the compliance, fear side. Because we assume a relationship might be further down than it really is. And then I think injury comes into relationships or hurt feelings or walls or whatever encroaches because we assume these things are in place. Therefore, we can use truth in the situation and it actually then becomes more the destructive compliance, fear, power thing that we don't intend but we get there. So I guess as, you know, we march on in life and we see, like, if certain relationships aren't right, I think it's important to go back up, work back to find out
where is it
wrong
or
what can we do to correct it? What do we need to ask of the other person or confess or whatever so that we can then get back on a path of maturity and growth?
It absolutely does. Now this is interesting. My integrity allows you to experience four things. It allows you to learn to trust. My integrity allows you to be loved. My integrity allows truth to flow into your life. And my integrity allows you to receive guidance. The best gift I can give anybody is the gift of my integrity. Okay? Because if somebody never learns to trust, they will never get here. The best they will ever do is comply. And, I mean, people who can't trust, I mean, that is a serious, 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 serious problem when somebody can't trust. And so my integrity, I live a life of integrity not for my sake. I live a life of integrity for other people's sake so they can learn to trust, they can be loved, they can receive truth, and they can receive guidance. which will allow them to walk in obedience. Okay? This is the path. So this is the path of relying. I think this is the path of healthy reliance, because what we're after in reliance, the outcome we're after, is right here. And there's a lot of detours along the way. Any other questions? Make sense? We're right against the stop. Well, sort out the heresy. Like I told Doug, I didn't have this chart before a week ago, so it'll go through several revisions, I'm sure. So, Doug, you want to pray for us, and we'll go have lunch.